GDP growth in the first quarter was revised down, but all signs point to a really good second quarter. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. The government reported this morning that real GDP increased at an annual rate of 2% in the first quarter. That's actually down from its earlier rougher estimate of 2.2%. Diane Swonk joins us to talk about this. She's chief economist at Grant Thornton. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So a downward revision in GDP growth for the first quarter. What does that mean? What should we take from that?
Well, the most important issue is that we knew we had a lackluster first quarter. Unseasonally bad winter weather did hurt us. We also had some special glitches out there that hurt us. We know that part of the weakness in the first quarter set us up for a big catch-up in the second quarter. So it's some of the reasons we're seeing such stellar growth estimates on the second quarter, which is about to end.
So after a bit of a slowdown, you think we're going to see kind of an economic gusher in the second quarter when we get those numbers in a few months?
Exactly. We're seeing a bit of a summer blockbuster in growth. Growth is accelerating both quarter to quarter and it looks like on a year-on-year basis. We're likely to see the best year in 2018 of the expansion. That's the good news. The bad news is, of course, like many summer blockbusters, the sequel isn't quite as good as the original. And even though we're seeing an acceleration in growth, 3% would have been considered dismal back in the 1990s boom when we saw these kinds of unemployment rates, more participation, more wage growth, and didn't have to pay the price in inflation that's starting to come.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at accounting firm Grant Thornton. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
President Trump has threatened tariffs of up to 25% on cars produced in the European Union. The White House says the move would protect national security by strengthening the U.S. economy. But car trade groups are concerned on a number of fronts. Marketplace's Renata Sago has the story.
When people call the Mercedes-Benz of South Orlando dealership looking for a good price on a new car, they get Ricardo Rivera.
I'm an internet sales coordinator here.
He expects that if President Trump's proposed tariffs kick in on the German brand, loyal customers who buy high-end will stay loyal. But entry-level car buyers?
They'll probably end up looking somewhere else where they can actually save a little bit of money.
Many might opt for used models. Used car sales grew to 10.6 million in the first quarter of this year. That's up 1.5% from last year. John Bazella heads the trade group Global Automakers.
Not only will new cars be perhaps less affordable for some, but higher demand for used cars will raise the price of used cars.
And lower profits for car makers could impact spending on research and development for electric vehicles, says Dave Sullivan, an analyst at the automotive consulting firm Auto Pacific.
That could really set us back in terms of being competitive.
Another concern, retaliation. We could see trade partners slapping tariffs on American exports. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace delivers public service journalism that matters. Now, you can help us do it by becoming a Marketplace investor today. And right now, your donation in any amount could unlock a $25,000 challenge from Candida if we meet our fiscal year goal of 6,000 donors by June 30th. Contribute today at marketplace.org to support the news you trust.
The U.S. Supreme Court's big decision yesterday in Janus versus AFSCME bars unions from collecting fees from non-union members in the public sector. But what does that actually mean for how unions operate moving forward? Benjamin Sachs is a professor of labor and industry at Harvard Law School and joins us. Professor Sachs, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Do we have a sense of how this would actually change union membership? I mean, are there a lot of people out there who are not members of unions, but we're still paying some substantial amount of money to unions?
The ultimate answer to your question is it depends. There are certainly a number of people who are paying what we call agency fees or fair share fees today. I think that the threat is what Justice Kagan lays out in her dissent in the opinion and what she calls a collective action problem of nightmarish proportions. A good analogy is if you imagine that the government decided that taxes were voluntary, what would happen is fewer people would pay their taxes. And the ability of government to provide services would then erode. That's what we call a free rider problem or a collective action problem, and that's the problem that's now been foisted by the U.S. Supreme Court on public sector unions.
Do we not already have a little bit of a collective action problem already? Because if you can get away with benefiting from union activity while just paying a lower agency fee instead of the full dues. I mean, isn't that happening already?
In some sense, we already have a collective action problem with respect to union political activity. So ever since this decision in Abood, which was overruled yesterday, everybody had to pay their fair share for the union's economic activities, that is, the union's role in negotiating you a raise, the union's representation of you if you get fired, and the union has to pay for lawyers to defend you. All of those things were covered by the agency fee, and that agency fee overcame the free rider problem. That's the system that the Janus Court has now dismantled.
Is there any way for unions to say, well, okay, fine, if you're not going to pay the fees or pay the dues, we'll just, you just don't get the raises that we negotiate?
So under current law, there is no way for unions to do that. It is possible after Janus that states could respond to the Janus holding and say, look, if unions can no longer require people to pay their fair share, then unions ought to have the right to decide for themselves whether or not to represent people who don't pay for their representation. I don't know how that would play out. It would be interesting to see. It would be risky for the union project, which, after all, is about everyone being in this together.
Benjamin Sachs, professor of labor and industry at Harvard Law School, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.